'Tis now the top of the hour. It is day three, and it is over to you.
Huzzah! So welcome back. In a way, when I sort of was reading through the Facebook comments and sort of thinking about what would be a good starting point today, it felt a little bit arbitrary. There's not sort of one theme that keeps coming up that it's like, oh, okay, this would be great for us to speak about. So I thought what I'd speak about, and it's something I talk about a little bit in the program, but it might just bear a little bit of time, is recognizing the difference between getting somewhere in the world or creating something in your life and feeling good about stuff. You know, feeling satisfied, feeling fulfilled, feeling happy, feeling content. Those two things, the idea that success leads to happiness in some way, are so intrinsic in everything in our culture that even though we can sit here and talk about how thought creates feeling, feeling is the shadow of thought, how nothing external can create or take away a feeling from inside us, how we don't have to have what we want in order to be happy. In fact, that when we're doing things in order to be happy, we're doing them in the wrong order. And yet, odds are really, really good that we think we would be happier if we were more successful. Right? There's a great example. There's a lawyer, a civil rights lawyer. Well, he wasn't just a civil rights lawyer, actually, but who lives near where I live, and occasionally, especially when we first moved here, used to see him driving around town in a buckskin jacket, white hair, and an open convertible. And his name was Jerry Spence. And he sort of got famous for never losing. Like I don't think, if I'm remembering my stats right, didn't lose a civil trial in 25 years or a criminal trial in 20 years. And he took on some pretty high profile cases. And one of the ones that I remember, and this kind of goes somewhere a little bit dark, so bear with me. I do have a point, and I think it will be worth it. But he was hired, he was brought in to defend a black man who was accused of raping and murdering a young white girl in Mississippi in the 1960s, maybe early 70s. But at a time where something that would be horrific at any time was times 10. And the thing that he did that stuck in my mind is one of the questions he asked the jurors was, are you racist? Are you racially prejudiced against African-Americans? For sure, he didn't say African-Americans, against blacks. And he wouldn't take anyone on the jury who said they weren't racist, because he figured the odds of finding somebody who wasn't inculcated in that culture, whether they agreed with it, whether they were all on board with it or not, were pretty low given the time and place. But he knew that if somebody was willing to be honest, he had a chance with them. If it was more important for someone to be honest than to look good, then they were going to make a good juror. And in fact, when it went to trial, the man did was clearly not guilty. And the true story came out later. And it's all in his, he's got a book called, I haven't read it in years, so I can't even tell you if it was a good book, but it was called How to Argue and Win Every Time. If anyone wants to kind of read more about him or that. But my point, and the reason that I kind of wanted to bring that up is, often I see people kind of go, well, I get the principle. Sure. Yeah. Okay. We're living in the feeling of our thinking. Yeah. Nothing outside us can make us happy. Okay, great. So how do I find my dream job? You know, why can't I get more money? You know, I'm never going to be happy, but I mean, I'm never going to be happy without a partner. I'm never going to be happy till I have a baby. I'm never going to be happy until, just look, we have been dipped in this particular bronze since birth, right? If some of the research I've been reading about how past memories parental memories can get passed genetically on to children, and that that can go, you know, where it's pretty deep in us. So the first thing that tells me is, well, may as well not beat myself up too much about it, right? It's you know, it's not exactly a personal quirk that it looks to me sometimes like life would be better if I would be happier if. But by the same token, it makes it a little bit easier for me to call bullshit on myself and to not pretend I'm all enlightened and shit. Because I see what I see when I see it. I don't see what I don't see when I don't. That's always going to be true. And the best I can hope for, and it's pretty good, is that that ratio will gradually improve over time. That maybe I'll be a little bit less full of shit today than I was yesterday. That maybe I'll see things a little bit more as they are today than I did yesterday, knowing that the less full of shit and the more clear I am in my seeing, the better I'm going to do in the world. Every time. So it was funny when Nina and I were walking over the weekend, and this was one of those points where we were just kind of like talking to distract ourselves. She said, why are you doing this? Because she had a very good reason. And I said, well, I'm doing it for you. And she said, okay, yeah, but there's other ways you could have supported me. And I said, well, okay. And honestly, A, I enjoy the time, but B, I kind of like doing things I can't do. There's something for me about walking into a situation where there's really no rational expectation of success that makes it much easier to go for it. I mean, in a way, that's at the heart of the Creating the Impossible program, right? And the Creating the Impossible book is, look, if we already know it's not going to happen through me being awesome, well, then we're free to really open up. We're free to really experiment. We're free to really get out of our own way and let whatever this deeper thing in us out. And to an extent, that's how it is with the inside-out understanding. We're probably never going to completely get it. But anything we get is worth its weight in gold. So what better territory to play in? No pressure for success, right? Because nobody's done it yet. Even enlightened people get caught up in it. But every opportunity for things to get better and better and better. So that was my offering for today. We can go absolutely anywhere you guys want to go. Obstacle Course to Success, Day 3, go!
Okay, you should all know the drill by now, but if you don't, go down to your participants box. There'll be an option there to raise your hand. I'll be able to bring you on. If you're on the phone, if you do *9, that will also raise your little hand and I can bring you on. So we're going to start with Michael today. Go ahead, Michael, you're unmuted.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Still morning here.
Yeah, good morning here, sir.
I don't have a question. I have just want to acknowledge, I've been participating at a certain level. In this last couple of days, I noticed something about the way I've been operating, which is literally living essentially from a place called something's wrong here. And I could find it. I could find something wrong with me, something wrong with them, something wrong with it. And I was pretty right about all of it. And not a lot of space there to be anything but right and wrong at the same time. and noticing that, it opened up. I mean, it just kind of, I dealt with it, dealt with it, dealt with it. And this morning, I was listening to you and to one of your conversations, and suddenly the Mr. Pransky's said in an aside that it's just focusing, like threading the needle. And it was like, that's all it is. I can focus on anything. I can focus on what's wrong, or I can focus on where's the joy in this moment by moment by moment by moment. And it's just threading the needle. And it's like it made everything change. I don't know how else to say it. It made everything change for me. Everything from even when I noticed I was making things wrong, that became funny. I mean, because there wasn't anything wrong there. It was just me making that up. So I want to thank you. It's kind of like I've been returned to a place I started from 30 years ago and have been lost in the wilderness forever. And I'm home. So thank you. Thank you. I don't know how to.
Welcome back.
I wish I had a question that was important or necessary, but I'm just going to hang out focusing, right? Threading the needle.
Brilliant.
On happiness. Thank you,
Michael. I mean, I'll speak briefly to Michael's point, then just before we move to the next. Sometimes hearing other people's insights is like watching their holiday photos. They sound beautiful, but you don't necessarily connect immediately to it. Other times you'll hear something in somebody else's insight that will spark an insight in you. So please do feel free to share your insights, because they are relevant in two ways. One, sometimes articulating it helps you see what you saw a little bit more. And two, sometimes in that articulation, someone else will twig to something. So please don't get teachy. I one of us is enough, but please do feel free to share what you're seeing. So thank you again, Michael. And who's got next, Lynn?
Okay, next let's go to Darren. Go ahead, Darren. You are unmuted. Perhaps. Going once. Let me find Darren going twice. Are you there, Darren? Hello?
Not looking good.
Not looking good. Okay, let's go to Karen Auld. Karen, go ahead.
Hello. I don't know that this is a question for the obstacle course, but I was fascinated actually by what you said about the parental memories being passed down. I'll tell you why. Because my daughter's involved in mental health in Australia. And she raised that point just yesterday. She is organizing a conference, and she's asked a principal's practitioner in Australia, Dean Rhys Evans, to speak on resilience. And some other consultant has come back saying, you know, what about this new evidence that suggests that resilience is not necessarily innate in people? Now, whether the guys out there kind of get it all or not is another thing. But I just thought it was so funny that you mentioned that. And I haven't come across that kind of piece of research. And I just... So I was associating it more with genetics. I just wondered what you had gleaned from it, Michael, in terms of, because if it's memories handed down,
well,
it's like a different, slightly different thing, doesn't it?
So I have not seen or read anything, and I'm no particular reason I would. I'm not up to date with psychological studies that suggest resilience is not innate. But resilience is not, to tell me that resilience is not innate is kind of at the level of telling me that squirrels don't have bushy tails. You have to spend about a minute and a half with a toddler to see that resilience is innate, maybe 5 minutes. At the outside, 15. Right? It is built into us. We reset. We come back to center. That is the essence of resilience. So I don't know what that research is. My guess is there's some research and somebody made a conclusion.
Yeah.
But I don't know it, so I also don't want to say. Now, the genetic memory thing, look, I've always thought whether the memory comes from this life, a past life, or somebody else's life, it's still in my head as thought.
Yeah.
So it's not as though I need to treat it with more deference because of where it came from. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like, hey, that shadow is made by Big Ben, and that shadow is made by a toy Big Ben. So that shadow's more, first shadow's more important than the second shadow. No, they're both a shadow. They're both something that comes and goes. They're both energy taking form. The fundamental energy which is taking form is unchanged. And I'm only not going to go deeper into it. Well, no, there's two reasons I'm not going to go deeper into it. Maybe three by the time I'm done. One, I don't know enough of the science to continue to talk intelligently about it. Two, it is kind of off topic for our purposes, because to an extent, what we're saying across the board is, hey, you can have memories of having been a goat in Afghanistan during a war, and it's not the reason why you're not moving forward in your career.
No, well, thank you for going off topic.
No. It's an interesting off topic.
Fun and helpful.
Absolutely. Good. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next up, let's go to Michael, or Michael with a A.
Michael's okay.
Michael's okay. Cool. Another Michael. Go for it.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Michael. I've been working as a coach, and I came across the principles around about 2 years ago. And currently I have a client, and she's a very successful businesswoman. And at first we were discussing the business issues and leadership and this kind of stuff. And now she's open more to any kind of discussions. And yesterday she opened a discussion about the man, because she's 40 years old and she's still single. Mm-hmm. And she's saying that there is no man that could really fulfill the expectations of her and so on, and this kind of discussion. And I wonder, what would you advise in this case? So, of course, she's a little bit involved in the understanding of principles, but except the relationship with the man, she has got the difficulties with this area. So,
well, okay. So here's what, and this is me just taking it off the description you just gave, right? But what she just told you is, I've spent years drawing a picture of my dream man.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm walking around and holding it up to everybody's face, and nobody's face is fitting my picture.
Exactly, yes.
Well, what the hell does that have to do with getting laid? Like, what the hell does that have to do with finding somebody and falling in love and creating a wonderful relationship? And now, again, I probably wouldn't come off quite as blunt with her than maybe I would. I don't know. But essentially, and my coffee is decaf, Blair, just so you know. But essentially, we make life difficult for ourselves. It's almost like we think, oh, well, it would be too easy to just walk out and grab my coffee cup. Let me do it on my hands. Well, you're right. It's going to be harder if you walk there on your hands. Mm-hmm. It's going to be harder if you only allow yourself to take two steps forward before you take three steps back. But you're the one who's making that crap up. That's nothing to do with how things get created in the world. That's nothing to do with how we right? Tell me any human being who would connect deeply, more deeply with another human being, running a checklist in their mind, mm-hmm. being present.
Right.
It's just a bad strategy.
So it was actually very similar. My advice was to be more present, not to have the expectation in head, as I was, because she realizes that, in quotation, it's everything is just thought, you know, but she realizes that, but in reality, it doesn't work that way for her. So, yeah, it doesn't.
No, and nobody realizes it's just thought. I mean, that's, we try, we do our best. That's kind of always my point from the beginning. We see some things as thought, and as time goes on, we recognize more and more things as thought. But we still think, for example, our expectations of what it should be like. That's not thought. That's not what it should be like, you know. And so it goes. So again, from an obstacle point of view, right? It's like when the obstacle is the picture that you drew and you're holding, there's a really easy way around that obstacle. And that's the thing again. When look, as I said at the very beginning of day one, this is perhaps overly simplistic, but the truth is, if I want something, there is absolutely nothing that can stop me from going for it. There are all sorts of things that will come up along the way, some of which I will easily overcome, some of which I may struggle to overcome, some of which ultimately maybe I won't. But none of that is a reason not to do it. Mm-hmm. And when we see that it's only me, right? It's only my own mind convincing myself that this is a good reason to do it or a good reason not to do it that ever stops me. And the problem is not so much when it completely stops me, because then at least it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. It's when it kind of just gets me to half-ass it. So I'm kind of going for it. Because then I'm constantly, oh, it's not working. Oh, it's still not working. Well, no, you're hopping around on one leg backwards. It's going to be hard for you. And you don't have to keep doing it that way. There's always a next step. You just keep taking the next step. The next step gets revealed. Well, hey, you either get there or you don't. You have a great time. Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's very refreshing all the time. Thank you.
Cool. You're welcome.
Okay. Darren is back, who, if I remember from advanced course, is not Darren at all. But yes, go ahead.
Hiya. My question is, to be a success for me would be to be a better mother. And I feel I'm really impatient. I quite often want to be in a different room. I feel I could do better. And then looking at the obstacles, I feel like some of it's skill, some of it's information, and some of it's like, maybe there's something a bit wrong with me.
Well, that if you notice, there isn't a category, stuff that's wrong with me. There is a category about belief. You could go in there, but you know, I'm fundamentally broken. Yeah, that's an obstacle, but it's not a real one.
The theory of being a parent is much easier than actually doing it.
Look, there's some at the beginning of his book, Raising Boys. Steve Biddulph, the author, quotes some British earl who from, you know, the Renaissance times or something, who said, when I began in life, I had 10 theories of parenting and one and no children. I now have 10 children and no theories. Theories of parenting are theories of parenting. Mm. We when it comes to relating, whether it is to somebody who we are, we share blood with, we share common markers in our genetics and blood, or whether it is to somebody that we choose, you know, a chosen child, or whether it is somebody that we take on as a partner, or whether it's somebody we meet in the streets, there are certain things that are true about human beings, and the same river of life runs through us all. That's something. And it gets easier to feel when we're with another. So it's almost like when the river in me and the river in you get a chance to kind of resonate, we both become more aware of the river. And that's that feeling of deep connection that we can have with a stranger, with a friend, with a lover, with a child. Yeah. And what gets in the way of that is we get up in our heads. So we just lose touch with the river and we start making up the other person. And therefore we're relating to the, you know, to the picture, not to the actual person, or I sometimes say it. It's like, I've seen more people have arguments with sock puppet partners, right? Where it's like their partner's the sock puppet and they're arguing with them in their head. And it's like, that's nothing to do with the other human being. So, you know, this isn't intended as diagnosis cure, but I guarantee you, broken though you may be in whatever ways you think you're broken, if you sit down with your kids and can in any way for even a moment get behind the noise in your head about it, you're going to feel deeply connected with them. Because that's how it works with human beings. And when you're deeply connected with them, let me just finish the thought, you will be a better parent. You can't help it. Both because what children crave is that feeling of connection, but also because you will have access to your common sense and wisdom. Because you won't be up in your head worrying about what's wrong with you, or what's wrong with the kids, or what's wrong with the relationship with the kids, or whatever else fills your head. We've all got our go-tos. Now, what do you hear in that?
I know that I'm making him, here he is actually, my, come here, sweetie.
As if on cue. Hello.
This is Leon, I'm
I
on
that. I pressed
the
pause button and it's not on yet, it's on.
Can you give me 1 minute, please, and I'll be there. This is.
So I've got a different plan. Go for it. Come back and tell us how it went.
Okay. That'll be
all
good.
Right. Watch out for Darren Barber's hand.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Perfect timing, isn't it? What can I say?
Nobody bring up what would happen if my house suddenly spontaneously exploded.
Let's go to Heather Jones. Go ahead, Heather. It's all yours.
Hi, Michael. Hello. I'm getting a lot out of this course. I have a sticky bit. I want to know about how you can seem to have an insight and then not have it. Because one of the biggest elements for me about success is to do a real radical physical upgrade. Mm-hmm. And one of the big things that really went right was I had a massive insight just not long before the course started, actually, listening to John L. Mockadem. Mm-hmm. Had this massive insight about the energy, and you refer to it in the energy thing. You know, I've had energy issues for so long, and I just saw the truth of this thing about energy, and it was one of the, you know, the big Charlton Heston insights. Yeah. It's changed everything. You know, I do feel tired, but I go out and I do stuff and I do stuff and I do stuff and I'm fine. Yeah. And it's brilliant, and it's just changed everything. So switch to, you know, another element, which is that sometimes I have episodes where I eat, you know, I try to eat really healthily, and then I'll have these episodes that it can go on for days or even weeks, where I'm just eating mainstream food that I know it feels terrible in my body, and I'm eating, I guess, for comfort or whatever. And a couple of times I've had really clear insight that, you know, I'm eating because of a, you know, I feel powerless to change a situation here at home that I don't like, and you know, it's not doing me any good. And there've been times when it's really clear to me that I don't want to do that, and the urge disappears for quite long periods, and then it comes back, and it's like I've had an insight that's not what I want to do, and that the urge disappears. So why does it come back? Why do I sort of unsee that? I mean, I can't figure that. It's like, you know, do I just not want it enough or something? I can't see around the edges of that one.
Well, I mean, what it sounds like to me is, you know, the category of people would often describe it as an obsessive thought. you know, why do I keep thinking about blank? And especially when I've had this insight, blah, blah, blah. The brain and the mind are different things. Mm. Now, part of what the brain does is it's associative. And so it very quickly develops habitual associations. It goes, happiness, coffee, happiness, coffee, happiness, coffee. And then you start thinking about coffee and you feel happy, right? Or I drink decaf and I wake up, right? That's the brain at its best. Now, the problem is some of the associations aren't terribly helpful, right? Some of the associations are, over time, not great for the organism or not great for the world. Now, the brain's not going to stop making the association just because the mind, your inner wisdom, your awareness, your higher consciousness sees it for what it is.
Right. Yeah.
The brain's the brain, the mind's the mind. Fortunately, we're not ruled by our brains. And the mind's wisdom, the mind's knowing, can allow us to ride the wave of our brain's particular habits and associations. Now, sometimes those habits and associations do change, right? Sometimes, I haven't had the suicide thought for a very long time, but I've had it within the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I used to have it constantly every day. My brain hasn't forgotten how to have that thought. It just doesn't seem to associate it with stress in the way that it used to.
Right. So you're saying that it's likely that I have developed habitual thoughts that, you know, certain foods are comforting when I'm feeling stressed about the circumstance that I feel powerless to do anything about. And that's just, so my brain is just carrying that on, even though my wisdom can usually see something different.
Yeah, I mean, at that level, and again, brain scientists listening in, I know this is an oversimplification, but it's not off track. You think of the brain like a 3-year-old, right? It's just looking for the simplest thing it knows. I hurt. Oh, that's comfort. I'm angry. Oh, that's going to make me feel better. I feel this way. That's going to help. And the fact that our adult self logically knows that kissing doesn't make the boo-boo better, right? It doesn't. That's not enough in and of itself. It's that our deeper self, which knows that the whole thing is made up, that allows us to have compassion for that 5-year-old, 3-year-old brain.
I think that might help. All I'll have to do when the thoughts come up is remember, I'm just imagining that I'm kissing the boo-boo better. Because it feels like that. It feels like a child kind of a thing. It feels like something, yeah.
You know, and sometimes a loving parent goes ahead and kisses the boo-boo better, even though they know, scientifically speaking, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, that's cool. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you, Heather. Oh, he's back. Right, let's go to, who knows what's going to happen next. Let's go to Maria next. Go ahead, Maria, it's all yours.
Hi.
Hello.
Are
you able to get your camera on?
Yes, I am. Yes, if it works. Is it working?
Well, something's happened. Let's see. It's only working if you're in a very dark room. That's okay. Let's just go ahead and chat.
Okay. So I was just saying, I hope you didn't cover this yesterday because I missed yesterday's call. But it's something, one of the videos you talk about the law of attraction. Mm-hmm. And that it doesn't work in the way that our things, our thoughts create feelings, and those feelings create a vibration, and that will attract good things to us. So my question is, what's the role of emotions in creating obstacles? Because my experience is when someone is in a negative space, things don't happen for them.
Well, so that's my experience too, but I have a different understanding of why that is. So generally speaking, when people are caught up, so it's not about how feeling bad, it's that you're caught up in the feeling, you're stuck in it, you're dwelling in it, you're trying to get out of it, they're not very present, they're not very resourceful, they're not really noticing the cues in their environment, and they're not accessing that sort of amazing love and warmth and creativity inside themselves. So they don't tend to do very well. Right. So, you know, if somebody comes up to you, I mean, I stand in a lot of lines, we probably all do. And you know, you can see the person, the person who be waiting at the end of the line knows as soon as somebody walks up, whether this is going to be a nightmare or this is going to be easy. Right. Before anything is said about what it is they were standing in line for. So, yes, at that level, energetically, of course, that's going to influence the interaction. If I'm not noticing the cues around me, that's going to influence my level of success in the performance, because I'm not going to respond quickly and appropriately to what's going on. I will bump into the furniture more, you know, and it will feel like it's going from bad to worse. So it's not that there's no connection. It's just that the one does not directly cause the other. And the reason that matters is, if I know that my energetic vibration is not causing my failure, then I'm kind of free to learn, if I understand about energy and how it just changes and comes and goes and takes on different forms, I can kind of just let that go through me, knowing that by our very nature, this life force washes out the system continually. It's like a bubbling spring. And if we let it, we'll clear. So 1 minute we're a bit down, the next minute we're a bit up, the next minute we're high as a kite, the next 20 minutes we're a bit down, the next hour we feel great. That's just the natural ebb and flow of thought. And I don't have to only move forward when I'm in this feeling and be very careful about doing anything when I'm in that feeling. Yes, I can take them into account and be a little more careful, right? When I'm out of sorts, because I kind of know probably not a great time to send that important email. But fundamentally, it just comes and goes. Now, what is that? What do you hear in that? That's either, oh my God, yes, or I'm not sure.
So I'm hearing that it's actually not that important that sometimes I, for example, might be feeling not great, because it's just the nature of energy flowing and changing, and it's not that important. But it just came to my mind, one of the seminars that Sid Banks did, and he talked about changing the cassette or changing the tape, or and for me, I understood that it's not focusing on thoughts that made you feel bad. But what I see from what you're saying is not about controlling the thinking or changing the thinking. It's more about understanding that it comes and goes, and that's fine.
Yeah. So in a way, what you're doing is instead of listening very closely to the tape and going, oh, that tape shouldn't be in, I should put in another, you know, it's like, oh, that tape's on. And you carry on. And then another tape's on before you know it. There's another song playing. Now, what does happen sometimes is you'll notice you're going down a rabbit hole you're getting caught up in some habitual thinking, and you will be able to just go, ugh, I'm not going to do that. Right? And when you can, that's great. But if it takes any more energy than that, now you're in it.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, Darren, who is not Darren, is back. Let's go.
Hello.
Hello.
There you go. He needs a POO. He's just telling me. I'm telling you. Oh. He can't spell. the connection thing. Mm. Yes, and reading the relationship handbook is what really helped me with that, actually, with my relationship with him. I've got two, and I find one challenging and one challenging at times. Mm-hmm. And he's beautiful. I can see the chat thing. I need to cover that up. It really distracts me. I think it's this thing, isn't it? I'm always trying to go on to the next thing with them. I'm with them, and then I'm thinking, and we've got to get out the door, and we've got to be on time for school. And I feel like I'm not fully present.
Yeah. Well, but see, that's actually just because you're not.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's your own wisdom kind of just aware. Now, you're not always going to be as present as you would like to be in your mind.
Mm.
The very awareness that it matters, the very intention to be as present as you can be, you'll just start noticing that, oh, wow, we're more connected. Wow. They're more responsive. Wow. It's really weird. I wanted to apply all this great parenting stuff, but now they're being really well behaved.
Mm.
You know, so it's subtle in that way. It's not so much that they stay the same and you change. The whole dynamic changes as you change, as it looks differently to you.
So just staying with that. And the slowing down thing, how... Is that just something that comes as well, that you slow down and become more present?
Yeah, because you slowing down is really thought slowing down.
Yeah.
It's your own churn slowing down. And our churn slows down as we begin to get a little bit sensitized to it. You know, sort of frog in the boiling water. We're so used to churn a certain level of thought speed that it feels normal to us. And then it starts feeling uncomfortable, and we start thinking, God, the principles are making me think so much more. I didn't used to be this busy-minded. Mm. But it's just that you're paying attention now. And then, again, whether you want to call it the kindness of the design or the wisdom of the system, as it starts to notice that, it adjusts it. As it looks like there's less to think about, you think less. So as an act of will, slowing down your thoughts, very difficult and, you know, not in my eyes, a super great use of your time. Mm. But to know that your thought will slow down, you will start to become more aware of the space between the thoughts. You will start to hang out more in that deeper feeling and then connect with others from that place. And it's amazing how intuitive we are from that place and how well we respond from that place and how well people respond to us from that place.
So maybe a lot of what's happening with me is my kids are going at a particular speed and I'm going at a different speed and the cogs just ain't catching and we're not moving together.
Maybe.
And maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's finished.
It's just a feeling, but I think you're going to be okay.
He is lovely. And I've got to go.
Please do.
Michael Boston.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Always unpredictable on a live call. Let's go to Patrick and see if he can follow that. Go ahead, Patrick, all yours.
Hey there, Michael. How are you doing?
I am well, thank you.
Well, great. Fantastic. For a second, I was like, how do I respond to that? Forgot for a second how to have a conversation. But I was going to say, oh, by the way, Michael, I talked to you a little while back on your radio show. Mm-hmm. You actually helped me start my YouTube channel. So.
Oh, cool.
So that was, I've been really into that. And I got your course, your obstacle course. And I think a really big thing that's still kind of, that still seems really real to me is money for me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like a big thing. I'm not sure this is going to be the right question for this, but I often think about the being an entertainer in terms of entertaining people on things like YouTube. And then I also get caught up in being a coach, which is like servicing or serving people. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know if I get really caught up in, I probably do, but I get really caught up in like which direction I feel like I have to choose between a direction in order to make money from one of these avenues, whether coaching or making videos or whatnot.
Well, okay, there's a bunch of different directions we could go in. What would be great to get an insight into, see something new about specifically?
Yeah. well, I really like making videos. Like that's like the thing I really like doing. But then I feel like I would have to abandon all this coaching stuff, in a sense, like coaching clients and everything. I'm not sure if I'm asking. I think I'm.
Well, okay. But so here's what I just heard you say. Tell me what's different about what you're saying than what I'm about to say. I really like using my left hand, but then I'm going to have to never use my right hand again. And I don't know if that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm guessing it doesn't feel like that to you, but I'm not really understanding the difference. Like what in the name of God does making videos have to do with whether or not you coach? Mm-hmm. You know, unless you're making videos about the evils of coaching, in which case, yeah, you're creating a little bit of a conflict for yourself.
Okay. I think I see that now. So I guess I don't have to exclude one over the other then.
I'm just being honest with you now, Patrick. I don't see any conflict at all.
Okay. So, now I think I got a better question now. So in one thing, in one way, I really enjoy servicing people and teaching them about the three principles and helping them get breakthroughs. And in the next, when I mean videos, I mean like doing these social experiments only and entertaining, not really even teaching anything in the videos. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of times I'm caught up in, do I want to just entertain people all day long or actually help people? I guess that's kind of the question.
Okay, so there's some interesting things you've made up about there being a difference between the two.
Okay.
To me, service is a place that you come from. It's not something that you do. Huh. So I'm guessing that your entertainment is in service of people enjoying themselves more. Of
yes.
People having a nice experience.
Yes.
That's worth, people spend money on that every single day, right? That. Now it could also be about you getting off on making funny faces. That's cool too. but you know, in neither, like it's not anti-service. Mm-hmm. We make up that it only counts if, right? Well, you know, is it really service if blah, blah, blah. No, it's all, to my mind, I don't know. It just doesn't sound like it needs this much thinking. Like, you like making videos, make videos. Something might come of it. Cool. You like coaching, coach. Something might come of it. Cool.
Mm. That just cleared up a lot when you said that servicing is something that comes from you as opposed to something you do. So I now see it more as a conjoint thing now. And I'm going to use my right hand as much as my left now. So thank you so much.
Very nice. Thank you, Patrick. Just before we move on, Lynn, I'm just realizing in talking to Patrick, like, I don't think, I'm not sitting here going, okay, you know, this, I'm doing this in service right now. I'm in service of these people. I need to serve. I need to put my service hat on, right? Oh, I'm good. Oh, yes. I'm going to heaven. And then later when I'm reading a novel thinking, well, I might go to hell, but this is really interesting. It's just, it's all just an expression of life. It's not, sorry. I'm always worried that I'm going to come off like a jerk, but I it's just not that big a deal. All right, quickly, get somebody else.
Yeah, please stop the man. Let's go to Patricia. Please bring him back down to earth, please. Go for it.
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
When I went through the obstacle course, I identified with quite a few obstacles, but the biggest one was fear. And I just recently made a huge leap. I moved from Atlanta, Georgia to Santa Barbara, California, to start a hypnotherapy practice. And like, this is like a whole new profession for me. So there's like all this fear, like I don't know. Like there's this voice in my head that, you know, I don't know. And so I try to gather all this information all the time and just putting it all in my head. And then like, when I know, then I'll be able to move forward. So, I am moving forward. I do take steps. But I noticed this morning I woke up and the first thing is just like this fear in my gut. And listening to your talks and your coaching, I'm like, okay, the fear is not real. It's something I'm making up in my head. Like there's some impending doom going to happen. It quieted down for a while. But what I'd really like, and I'm okay with doing it anyway, even with the fear. But what I'd really like is not to have the fear. So I know that I'm doing something in my thoughts that's bringing up this, I'm not sure what my question is. I think my question is there, and I think another thing that you said is like, the more that you just do it, and you realize that, oh, there was nothing really to be afraid of after all, that then the fear begins to dissipate. But if there's anything
let me try a few things. So one is, it's not so much the fear dissipates, it becomes less credible. Right? We think fear always has an important message to tell us, and the more scared we are, the more important it is that we listen. And as we start to see the difference between a genuine, clear, and present danger response in our body, which is one thing, and all the fearful thinking that we have about life, which is a completely different thing, it just, that fearful thinking becomes less credible. We're less inclined to do or not do anything because of it. It's like, ugh, yeah, really scared. Okay, anyways, what's next? Now, another thing that you said is the fear isn't real. Well, the feeling of fear is real, but what we think it means isn't real. What we think is causing it isn't causing it. So it's not that you have to dismiss the feeling. In fact, the feeling wakes you up. The feeling lets you know, oh, God, I am in my head. Right? So to want to get rid of the fear is, this isn't a straight analogy, but it'll sort of work. So if I have a thermostat set to bring the heating on at when it gets down to 68, right? Because let's say and let's say that fear is 65. on the thermostat, right? So the thermostat should come on at 68, but it doesn't always work. But by the time it gets down to 65, it really kicks on. And I start to stabilize it. The temperature starts to go back. I start to rise again. Well, it's like to not want fear is to like not want that stop at 65 degrees. That's a cue for the thermostat to kick in. The thermostat's not going to work if you start eliminating reference points. But by the same token, as you get more kind of awake to this, the thermostat's going to come in at 68 more of the time, so you will get to 65 less often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you. I just want someone to say, yes, it's going to get better.
Yeah, well, no, yes, it's going to get better.
Okay. Thank you.
Should we try and sneak Fernando in?
Let's try and sneak Fernando in. Go for it, Fernando, all yours.
Hello, Michael. Hello. I got from Spain. I apologize my English because I don't practice as long as I want. My question is about the video in session 3. I think when you explain there is no direct relationship between experience and circumstances, and we don't have to fall into the trap that believe that our experience are the circumstances. And my question is, I know it could be a little bit generic, but what is your advice to use into our favor that awesome projector or editing machine that we have?
I'm not sure I really understand the question. So what is my advice on how to use the mind better? Or
Yes. Seeing that we have a fabulous machine that can project the experience as the circumstances, and that we have to avoid to use it in against us, what is your advice to that we can, how we can use it to get more from life, not and just to avoid to be blocked or to be confused by the experience circumstances, but to click a little bit that.
There's no way I'm going to do this one justice in a minute and a half, and I'll try anyways. So. Really, as we get quieter, as we look to the silence out of which the projector projects, we get wiser. And because we're not dissipating all that thought energy in a million different things, it sort of accumulates. It becomes more powerful because it's concentrated, not dissipated. And then wherever we aim it, there's that much more thought power. There's that much more capacity. There's that much more bandwidth for insight and fresh thought and creativity and responsiveness. So it's simply, you know, we all have this thought energy, but most of us are spending it left, right, and center on a million different things. So when that stops looking like a good idea and we settle down and we kind of, it accumulates and then there's more thought power.
Okay, I understand. Is it like in calmer water, we can navigate better?
Yeah, and the water that we're navigating is in here, not out there.
Okay, yeah. Nice. Thank you. Great. For your answer.
Thank you, Fernanda. All right, gang, we are done for the day, but we got two more days. So your homework sort of is take a fresh look at the obstacles and pick one that for you, you go, man, this is the one that gets me most. And let's talk about that when we talk tomorrow. All right.
Fabulous. I will unmute you all, say a noisy goodbye, and then I will see you all tomorrow. Thank you for being here.
Bye.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Bye. Thank you, guys. Have a good day, and I will see you sometime, same place tomorrow. Kids included. See you later. Bye.
Bye. Bye.